this.
I never recorded anything with this before.
Yeah.
Oh, you have? Okay, thank you. Back up. Okay. Siyata Deshmaya, just a couple technical points to start with. Number one, I have to mention before anything else, thank yous to the SOI for covering the cost of these ego boosters. The packets. Nelson Waitman is very helpful and continues to be helpful, and I just wanted to tell everybody my appreciation for that. The other thing is that, more importantly than anything, I want to make it clear that this Chabura, it's not going to be, probably not going to be weekly, as I heard Rabbi Maybrook said. Maybe once or twice a month. It's really just with Tzorach. I'm not looking for an opportunity to say stuff, but when it comes up in relevance to what the guys are learning anyway, so we'll try to have the occasion to do so. It's in no way trying to replace or suggest that what Rabbi Simon and Rabbi Maybrook are doing are not sufficient, but on the contrary, this is something for a while Rabbi Schechter has been pushing for the things that go on in the OU in practical real life and how they relate to people who are trying to learn Nona Yoredeya should be out in the open to some extent, even though a lot of the OU's policies are kept confidential because there's a lot of troublemakers out there. But there's a lot of shemesh that is definitely relevant to people who are learning the sugyas and should be as much as possible. And I think David Mintz has really been pushing this for about 2 years, and especially after he got involved in the OU, and was very helpful as well as Rabbi Yanak in making the relevant materials available. So it's really due to their effort. Okay. Finally, in terms of the technical side, I am not a buck in any of the inyanim over here, and I'm really doing it as an opportunity to be learning along with the guys. And so anything I say is subject to discussion, and I hope it invokes discussion so we can try to invite things even better with your help. I'm also not a buck in giving over shiurim, so I'm also very open to any input that would make the presentation, make the subject matter more interesting or better presented. So please tell me whatever can be done. Okay, now the trick is there are two elements of Yoredei L'maisa that one can cover. One is what we call industrial kashrus, and the other stuff are the kitchen shilas. Every time I speak to a posek, Rabbi Sablowski, Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Miller, they all said mamish the same thing, that 99% of the shilas you're going to get are localized to a number of, let's say, three or four simonim in Shulchan Aruch, which are primarily Nosin Tam Lefgam, Dover Charif, and Naparnat. And those in their own right are very complex. And, Rabbi Simon gave a shiur the other day, quoted the Maisa with Reb Chaim and the Chasana. That's a great example as to how in Yoredei, as opposed to many other Chalakim and Shulchan Aruch that we're used to, a Shaila can comprise many different elements from different Simonim, and until you get the big picture, it's hard to be able to analyze a Shaila without all those tools at your fingertips. So it makes our task a little bit more complicated because for many of the most practical Shailas that come up in the kitchen, it might be March or April till we're able to talk about those things just till we get the background done. So the goal of the shiurim for now, number one, we'll be a little bit more focused on what goes on industrially, factories, food production, restaurants, etc. But I'm going to try to take one major paradigm in the industry, in kashrus industry, and then try to see at least what side nafkaminas we can take out for the type of things that do show up in someone's kitchen. On that note, I want to invite anyone who has interesting, complicated shadows that come up in the kitchen to bring them to me, because part of the chomer for what I have prepared for later in the year are things that came over the last 2 years to the guys who were learning Yoredei, and they sat down with Reb Schechter, and Reb Schechter went point by point the way to analyze a question. So any more weird and more unusual permutations of shilas that you can come up with that do happen can make the analysis even more effective. So I would like to ask for that as well. And finally, if things are less lemaisa, just give it a little less time, and we'll try to develop it as much as possible. But as the year goes on, Mirz Hashem, it should be even more practical again on a household basis. Okay, so the first Shaila, again, to set out the topic, and then we'll break it down from there, which is extremely common and is literally going on every day as we speak, involves the transportation of materials that are used, ingredients in everything from medicines to food to anything you can imagine, across the ocean from other countries. In specific, across the Pacific, there's a great deal of production of oils. You know, we think of oil, corn oil, canola oil, oils that come from animals. We're also used to cottonseed oil and coconut oil and the derivatives of many different types of fruits and vegetables. And a very large degree of those ingredients come from places such as Malaysia, very far away, Asia, remote parts of the Pacific, and they have to be brought to America. They have to be brought everywhere. Now, it's very easy if you're the Bedatz in Yerushalayim, let's say, and the Israeli market for whatever, you know, let's say, we'll use the example of cottonseed oil just because it's prevalent. Whatever they're using in Israel, the amount that they need is able to be zeroed in on a limited number of shipments, and the size of the shipments themselves are much smaller because the country's not that big and the need is very small. So in a situation like that, where you're providing primarily for a kosher a community, it's a lot easier for the companies who are administering kosher certification on the companies that transport the oils to say, okay, we want it in this boat, we want it shipped at this time, and this way we know what else is on the boat, we know what else is going to come in contact with the kalim around that time. But if you are talking about shipping oils to America, so the kamos that they need in America is mamash ad l'shamayim. A company like Procter & Gamble is transporting hundreds of millions of gallons of these ingredients, you know, over the course of a year. And if you think about a boat, according to Wikipedia, a tanker can be several hundred feet long, as was recently in Esgala to the Mevinim. Belfer Hall is about 254 feet long. If you ever want to climb it or climb down it, but someone recently determined that. So if you think that that's 254 feet long, we're talking about ships that can be that long and much bigger. Schefter likes to say that a hold, meaning the cargo area of a boat, can be the size of the base medrash, and that's all filled with oils. So the nafka mina for it being so big, in addition to what we mentioned before, the nafka mina for it being so big is that it's much harder for a kashrus agency to keep track of all that's going on in and out of these boats over the course of the year. There's hundreds of boats, thousands of boats all over the world, you know, traveling back and forth. But if you think about a hold the size of a base medrash, so if you have to heat that, for instance, so you're going to have a cargo which is heated to very, very high temperatures, because to keep something that hot, something that large that hot, you need to have a tremendous source of heat. And it's not Shiloh's of Yatzoletis, though. It's well beyond that. And the question arises when a kashrus company cannot have the same type of pikuach on all the boats and the whole industry. How do we make sure that the items that are the ingredients that are coming to America remain kosher, that they're not on the boat at the same time with non-kosher ingredients, and to make sure that the kalim themselves are not previously used by with non-kosher ingredients. So sometimes just for the preservation of the ingredient. You know, I'm just giving an example.
And we're seeing the kalim is being used from the kalim belong to the ship, and the ship wherever is being used, the liquids in there, or the kalim come from. We don't know.
So usually a cargo ship, it's not like a pot. It's built into the ship. You know, so there's not much flexibility with that. I think so. Yeah.
So just to clarify, we're talking about like a ship which has like some tank in it.
Right.
Different times has different substances, right. And sometimes we're going to put in oil, let's say cottonseed oil.
Right.
So our concern is what else has been in that tank. We're not necessarily concerned they're putting like pig oil in at the same time.
You mean in the same tank?
Yeah.
If you're talking about liquid substances, so you wouldn't be able to keep pure cottonseed oil if you put the...
And what would be a solid substance that we are concerned that they're
So I don't know if they transport solids like that, but so on that note, you know, this is what we'll talk about even more. As much of a concern as what was in the kalem last time is what is in the kli that's adjacent, directly adjacent to the kli that's holding the kosher cottonseed oil, because you know, there might be a separation between the two distinct kalem, but when they're up against each other and you're reaching high temperatures and the wall becomes the yatzo lettuce bow, so then there's, you know, there's an obvious opportunity for transfer of time. I want to say the question for the end, unless I say something that makes sense, just so we finish the material in time and we can clarify. I don't know if we'll finish this topic today, maybe next week, whenever. But okay, so there's a couple chashos that we mentioned, and there's a couple ways of dealing with it. Some are pertinent to what we've already learned in our day this year. We'll try to focus on those, and the other things are dealing with chazakas, which are less likely to have come up so far. So let's get that out of the way. One thing that helps you a lot in terms of chazakas is that a company like Procter & Gamble has tremendous pressure, number one, from their own production procedures, in addition to government law, to retain the purity of whatever the ingredients are. Okay, and they will have, therefore, engineers and chemists over there on the other side of the Pacific checking everything that comes in before it gets in there and before it gets shipped off. And they have people who are monitoring what's coming into the ports in America as well to make sure that it is pure. And again, if they didn't have pure substances, they wouldn't be able to produce their product and they'd probably get in trouble with the law, which just try to monitor these things. So we're not going to get into that. That's part of a larger issue of to what degree the government pikuach counts for halacha. But let's try to focus on the things that are relevant to Nesinas Tam. Okay, and that starts with really understanding very simply how the Nesias of Tam really works. You know, a lot of people come to start learning Chulin and they think that Tam is some sort of superstitious thing. Rabbi Willig says spooky tumor or something like that doesn't really fit with our perception of science. And so maybe doesn't 100%, but there's a much greater deal that we can understand how things do work in reality than we know at this point. So we'll start with some Gemaras quickly just to get into the topic, and then we'll see the Tshuva Smir Seshem in the Achronim. Okay, so the Gemara talks about, even before that, the first Tosfos on the top of the page, everyone's seen by now, is already preempting this whole discussion, and he says that if you drop a kazayis of chalav into a pot, so how is it going to be that based on the Gemara's cheshbon that you're going to take into account the time that's in the walls and then the little bit of water that's in the pot, that magically you're going to have enough shishim to be mevatel? If I'm looking at the milk, so isn't that a good enough reason for me to understand that the milk is still there? The answer will be yes, and that's why Tosfos has to come up with another tzir. But now we're going to understand a little bit more how we arrive at that. So the Gemara says chal b'shishim chal min aminyan. Chulei v'chulei, couple of lines down, the Gemara says, Omer Ravashi, Yavina Be'erav Kahana, Yiboylam Ki Mishorin, Yididei Mishorin, O Mai Dinopik Minei Mishorin. So if you drop the chal into the pot, do I have to start cheshbening shishim keneged the entire chal? Or do I only need to cheshben shishim keneged what left the chal? So the Gemara says, Pshit, Yididei Mishorinon, Dib Mai Dinopik Minei Minoyodinon. So therefore, the only way for us to evaluate the case is by being Mishar Shishim connected to the entire Chal, because if we're going based on what left the Chal, there's really no way for us to know that. We don't see it happening when the Chal is submerged in the pot. And so the Gemara says, if you put it into one pot and fold it into another pot, how come I have to do the same thing again? So the Gemara says, Amar Yitzchak Brei the Mishar Shishim Chal Atzma Oser Shavu Rabbanon Kachatil Din Veilo. Once we understand that it's a Chatil Din Veilo, then it has the capacity to answer multiple times. Okay, but let's focus on this issue of the Gemara suffix, whether or not we have to worry about what came out of the pot or what actually the thing weighs. And the Rishonim already deal with a very simple style in the sugya. Why is the Gemara asking only on chal? Chal is always the exception to the rule. It only needs chlamishim b'teisha, etc., etc. Where did we get to focus on chal? So the Rashba quotes from the Ramban on page 2, the dafka chal hu di ba'aluhu, mishum the chal atzma moter. Okay, so the Ramban says very simply, the reason the Gemara had to ask dafuk from chal is because chal is different than everything else. Shari surim, there's no suffix. Shari surim, of course you're mishar keneged kulo. But if you see that answer, so you got to go back to the Gemara, and then you're stuck with where we started, because we haven't really clarified anything that we anything better than we did before. Fakir, the question is bigger. We were asking, do I buy an Isser? Do I need to know how much came out of it, or the Isser itself? So the answer is, Chal is a suffix, everything else is a Vada, everything came out. But then we're right back where we started with. You haven't told me why Shari Surim should be any worse than Chal, because if we're understanding that the Matzias of Tam is that something leaves this item and goes into the pot, so shouldn't that be the same whether you're talking about Isurim or whether you're talking about Chal? Shari Surim versus Chal. So this Ha'ar is already pointed out by Rav Moshe in a very important tshuva in Chelek Aleph Yerodei Siman Mem Aleph. And this, I think it's kedai. Everyone should read this, certainly by the time you're done with Siman Tariches. And it's really the type of tshuva where you see the godless of emotion in Svara and Chiddush and Diyukim. It's mind-blowing. So he says, if you look at the top of the second column on page Nun Tes, B'tzorach Lomar, Big Yisod, Tzorach Lomar Dover Chadosh, Shavi Surin, other than Chal, Afim Hayinu Yodim L'Shar Komai Denafik Minei, Nami Hayitzorach L'Shar B'Didei. You'd still have to be Meshayer connected to the entire size of the Isser. Mishum Dehumi didn't borrow Velomi Suffik. Because that wasn't part of the Suffik of the Gemara, that was something the Gemara always knew. The Yesh Koch B'chol Dover Litain Tam Ad Shishim Kamoso. Because an item has the ability to give Tam up to 60 connected its own size. But Tam Dinafik Minei through whatever came out of it. Ashu Adayin Kaim, even if that Chatichos Nevela is still sitting there. Velomi Moach, and it hasn't dissolved. V'ashu Pachos Mishishim, even if that which came out of it is less than that. The Begat Shiur, the Ad Shishim Kamosu, Yachol Yitin Tam B'maydenach B'minei Bebar. Even if only a little bit came out of that larger Chaticha, doesn't make a difference, that's enough to require us to be Mishar Shishim Kenegdo. But Rai Gadol, I don't mean to read so much inside, but just these next few paragraphs are important, I'll expand upon it another. Rai Gadol Zeh is from the Gemara of the Zeroah B'Shela. Because there the Gemara says that the Zeroah and the aisle are in the pot at the same time, so we see from there that since the ratio between a Zeroah and an aisle is 1 to 60 or 1 to 100, whatever you hold, so that's how we know that this is the Shir Shishim. And even if it's an Asmachta, whatever you hold in Rishonim, but that is the paradigm. So the question is that when the Zeroah is sitting there, so only a little bit has come out of the Zeroah at that point. And nevertheless, we still say that you have to be Meshayer Keneged Kulo. So that implies that it's even if it's only a little bit there in the mix, in the Kedera, because the whole of the Zeroah is still visible, that proves Rav Moshe's Yisod that even a little bit can be Nosim Tam on Shishim in a larger Kedera. That's number one. Then he says, in the middle of the paragraph, Achi Yish Lahakshos, all that tells us, Lamaisa, if you think about the Gemara, is that what Shishim does is be mevatel the little bit of time that came out into the Gedera. Fine, because that's all that has happened so far. But what happens if the Zeroah and Mishela are cooking for several hours? And this can happen. Eventually, the Zeroah is going to start decomposing. It's going to be cooked so much that it's going to melt into the whole Kedera. So maybe, Rav Moshe says, in a situation like that, you'll need much more than Shishim. Because if Shishim was enough when a little bit of Tam came out, now when the Etzem HaChaticha has been dissolved, I don't know, only 300 times, because now I not only need to be Mevatel the Tam that left, but I need to be Mevatel the item itself. So to that he says, again, another big Yisod, Tzorach Lomar Desfirli L'Gemara. Rav Moshe is saying this is all pushed in the Gemara between the lines. The Kevin the Alfinon dimnafik kol atame chaticha osra at shishim. Since we hold that the maximum that can come out of a chaticha is shishim, imkein shavon ishar tam chaticha shiuchal litein otam. If all the tam is shishim, so that leads us to the conclusion that there's no tam left in the chaticha. Okay, just an illustration of this, and this is true alach l'maisa. If you look in Siman Pei Zayin, so Pei Zayin talks about Basar B'chol, specifically making cheese. The way they make the cheese is they take the enzymes from the animal. And the question is, how come the effect that the animal has on the milk that makes it into cheese doesn't oster from Basar B'chol? And one nachgivina that they talk about over there is, let's say I had a piece of the stomach of the cow, which is where the enzymes come from, and I dried it out legamri. It's mamish yavish ke'et, it's a lush on the poskim, and then I use it to congeal the cheese. Is that a problem of Basar B'chol? And the poskim say it's takamotar. we're machmir because we want to make sure, maybe we're not 100% sure it's totally yavish, but be'etzem, if I have something that's totally dried out, it can't be no same time anymore. So Rav Moshe says the same thing over here. If all the time came out and it has the power to asar at shishim, so what's left in the pot from that chaticha is ke'etz ba'alma. And therefore, were it to dissolve, it's not going to increase the shiurim of bittul, because in the end of the day, there wasn't anything left in it. Okay, because the yisod that comes out from the Gemara, if we have to put it in one sentence, is that a piece asers up to 60, its size, through the little bit that came out of it, and once that little bit has come out, that carries the tam, then we know that anything that's left is zero, is worthless, is not going to be no same tam. Okay? Keep that in mind, because Rav Moshe is going to say something on the next page which has to be worked into the previous line. Okay, this is the next step. This is going to be most important to our discussion today. So now Rav Moshe says, is this really going to be the same as a case where, let's say your classic, this can happen in the kitchen, this happened last year by someone in the Beis Medrash, that Erev Shabbos, Cholent was cooking, and they just happened to take the milk out of the refrigerator, and the milk was open, whatever, and a couple drops fell in. Okay, it's a nightmare on Erev Shabbos, but the point is that if I have, that's the same thing as our Zorog B'Shela case, with one exception. Now instead of a Dover Yovish that fell into the Cholent, that fell into the Zorog B'Shela pot, Lach fell in. So Moshe says, well, let's say, as we said before, if it's correct that, let's say, 3 ounces of milk fall into the pot. Okay, so now, for instance, 1 ounce of that milk has already started to spread around in the pot. So, according to what Moshe said, that 1 ounce that spreads around already has the ability to give shishim into the rest of the pot. So what's left? Another 2 ounces of milk that's about to get spread into everything else. So Moshe says, all we've proven is that when you dry something, when Tom leaves a Dover Yavish, and dries it out, so there's nothing left, if it's Nimoach, to give more time into the Gedera. But if it's a Dover Lach, you can't say that. If 1 ounce is spread into the Gedera, and that asers Shishim times, you can't say that the 2 ounces of milk that are left there are Yavish Ke'etz, and not Nosin Tam. It's as wet and as moist and as liquidy as the other ounce that already went in. I just want to make sure that point. Is everyone, you got that point? You can't say that what's left over in Lach, after the initial Nesinas Tam, is as powerless as a dried up piece of meat. Dried up piece of meat is dried up piece of meat. It's, I don't know what the chemical composition is, but it's not Tam Basar. But milk can't be dried up if some milk has not yet spilled in to the rest of the Kedera. So I would say I need Shishim Keneged every ounce of milk that's there. And maybe I'll need Shishim times, I'll need several times more than that even. So Moshe says, Ella Balkarchach, you have to say a world-class yisod, that the difference between Yavesh and Lach is just that. Then when it comes to Yavesh, so a little bit can give off its tam, and I'll need to be Meshach Neged Shishim, and it's going to leave over the dried-out Chaticha. And Be'etzem, what we've said is that you can separate tam from mamoshes by Dover Yavesh. Masha'in kein Lach Balach. He says, when it comes to something that's liquid, like that milk, you cannot separate the lechus from the basar. The lechus from the etzem. You can't say that this piece of milk actually has two components. Because from what we perceive, it's just a liquid. And wherever the liquid goes, the tam goes also. Unlike the meat, where the tam can go and you'll leave behind the physical piece of meat. Okay? In one line, lach, you cannot separate the tam from the mamish. See, if that's correct, Rav Moshe says a big nafkamina lahalacha, and most importantly, a beer in the sugya of chal that we just read. The question was, how come the Gemara Dafke asks by chal and doesn't ask by shari surim? The Rajba answered Chen Ramban that when it comes to a piece of nevela, it asers ad shishim no matter what, no matter how much was nafkamina. Mash'inkin chal, we know Tosis, it's Mavur and Tosis. The only problem by chal is really the cholov shebegumos that's leaving the chaticha and going into the gedera. So really what asr, what has the potential to asr when you talk about chal, is the lach, is the milk that's hiding inside of the crevices in the chal. And if the real osir over here is the lach, So when you take it together with our previous yesod, then yeah, kama denafik mine has to be taken very seriously. Because if you can't separate the tam from the mamish by a davar lach, so it means that whatever the lach is, that's where it is. You don't say that, okay, this piece of milk is this ounce of milk is lying on top of a piece of meat. Okay, now it was 3 ounces. Now I clean off 2 ounces, and 1 ounce got soaked in. So what we just found out, if the lach can't separate the tam from the mamish, so if I wipe off 2 ounces from the surface of the meat, I only need to be mashayer shishim in the meat, can I get 1 ounce of milk? Not can I get 3 ounces, because if I knocked out that mamish of milk, then it doesn't have the ability to give tam. Masha'enkin, if 2 pieces of meat touched each other, if a piece of nevela meat and a piece of kosher meat touch each other, I need to be mashayer shishim in one piece versus the other piece. Masha'enkin, when it comes to the milk, if the milk is clearly not in that chaticha, and I see it not in that chaticha, it's not there. Okay? And the to give an example, and this is what brings tam keiker most, you know, tangible to our senses, is the classic case where you have a milchika pot. Okay? A milchika pot that I cooked fleishiks in. Okay? So the din is, if it's a brand new pot, and I've never used it before, and I use it for 3 ounces of milk, so the next time I use that a pot accidentally for meat, so I need to make sure that the piece of meat is 60 times 3 ounces of milk. Okay, because if nothing else went into the walls of the pot meolam, I know it's not more than 3 ounces of milk. Okay, but that's if for some reason I know for a total fact that the first time I cooked in that pot, all 3 ounces went into the walls of the pot. But let's say I cook Wacky Max. Okay, so Wacky Max calls for a cup of milk, 8 ounces of milk. Okay, so I leave it on the fire for a while, and eventually there's some evaporation, whatever it is, but there's always a little bit of milk that's left over afterwards that you spill out, I think. I haven't made it in a long time. But let's say I start out with 8 ounces, some gets evaporated, some goes into the macaronis, and there's 2 ounces of milk left on the bottom of the pot, and I spill it out. So Moshe says, it's pashut. Achush made it that you know that those 2 ounces of milk that you spilled out into the sink didn't also go into the walls of the pot. So the next time I come and use the pot for fleishiks, if I started with 8 ounces of milk, I zecher don't need to be mishayer shishim pamim 8 ounces. Shishim pamim 6 ounces I do. You'll tell me some of it was evaporated, some of it went into the macaronis, and a chanami. There is always some amount of milk that we're not going to be able to account for. And a large part of Yerodea, coming from that sugya of kama denafik mineh, we don't know, we can't see everything. We can't see everything, so we don't know, and we have to be mesharek neged the worst possible scenario. But one thing we know for sure is that 2 ounces of that milk did not go into the walls of the pot. A similar case that Moshe is really dealing with is, let's say I had a pot of cholent. The way they used to have their ovens, so it would be a large opening and, you know, and a flat surface, and it was possible that you were cooking a fleishika pot over here and a milchika pot over here. And if a milchika pot spills over and runs underneath the fleishika pot, so Moshe was asked, how much do I need to be mishar kneged that milk in the fleishika pot? So Moshe says, if you see 2 ounces of milk still on the floor beneath the pot, you know it didn't go into the pot. If you started with 4 ounces and there's 2 ounces left, you only need to be mishar shishim in the meat connected the 2 ounces of milk beneath the pot that clearly didn't go in. Okay, so this is Rav Moshe's yesod, and again, it gets back to this basic understanding that there is something about tam that we can understand in a scientific way. Yavi sounds like something crazy. If, like we said before, 2 pieces touch each other, I need shishim kenego. We'll talk about that a little bit more. I think there is a haschola of a beer in that. Maybe we'll come back to that for another. Once we have this yesod, so then that makes the getting back to the ships a lot easier. Because if we want... Yeah, sorry.
This is not what you're talking about.
Why is that?
So nine...
Hard chelov. Yeah. Cautious. Um, Okay, so if you're talking about the boat holds, you're talking about these cargo ships that are transporting the different materials. So the way that the contracts agencies are going to try to clear up the issue, number one, through a number of methods, is to determine that there is no transfer between one hold and the next. Even if they're adjacent to each other and Tom can pass through from one to the other through the walls of the hold, once you have Ramosha's Yesod, so then you have a great start to understanding things. Because if I can put in X number of gallons of oil in Malaysia and I get to California in the port in San Francisco and there's still just as much cottonseed oil as there was before, so then you know that nothing went into the other tank, into the tank where it has the kosher stuff in it. And that is the most important lechora, and probably the ready most thing that people will be most likely maskim to in understanding how we can kosher such a situation.
Yeah. This idea of Ramosha, accepted.
Oh, okay, so that's our next issue. So now, when I saw this Ramosha, yeah. The meat into the milk.
Right.
But the mice of the milk can't hold more tam than the milk itself. What's that?
The milk
Okay. I had the har. That har is going to be end up being one of the strongest rites for Ramosha. So hold on, if we don't get it today, I'll talk to you afterwards. But I know what you're saying. Okay, so now, so in Tal's question, let's go for a second to page 12, okay? Darkei Tshuva. I was trying to point out that Darkei Tshuva is very important because it's one of the first Malachi Sfarim. I would also add maybe that Darkei Tshuva is very important because it's very often, not always, but integral in recording what the minhag ha-morei ora has been in the past in Europe and in Midori Doris in certain big time machlokesim. And if you talk to Rav Schachter, he will often go based on what the minhag had become as recorded in the Darkei Tshuva. So it's very important to learn when you can, especially on these big shilas. So in Sifkat and Beis, so it sounds like they were already dealing with this already. Ein bekuntres van chachamim she'omad shom chacham echad al nechkar. Our first science experiment here. Uvdishin espashal chatichas lechem oshnapor b'vias cholov roseach. So a piece of bread falls into the milk, and when you take the bread out and you measure the milk, let's say 1 ounce is missing. And then that piece of bread falls into the cholent. So do you have to be mishar kneged the 1 ounce of milk that was missing, because that's all that transferred from one pot to the other, or do you need to be mishar the entire piece of lechem? So if you look at the last line on that column, v'af shenira gamkein shelo nechzer klo mehalechem v'chein lo nechzer klo mehatafshil amrian demizeh nechnas lezeh amizeh lezeh akin pashut v'tzarech sam of kol chatichas alechem ayin sham v'hu pashut. I think that's the way you I'm finding out the hey pay. So he says davar pashut, I can't tell you how the science works. Lamaisa, only an ounce is missing from that pot, but he said I have to be mishar kneged shishim. Assuming that entire piece of lechem filled itself up with cholov, even though there's just as much cholov, almost as much cholov as there was before in the milcha kapat. Okay, so this goes back. I don't know exactly when the kuntres vav chachamim lived, but this. If you're learning your day the first time, you go through the seifim, simanim. It's not such a surprise to see something like this because, again, like we said before, sometimes your initial reaction is we don't know how the rules work, so let's just assume that it's against the chush. So I don't know how this would stem with Ramosha. I think Ramosha held, you look later in the tshuva, again, I suggest you read the whole tshuva, he says besides these rayas, and he has other rayas, he says, Misfarad doesn't make sense to say otherwise. And if you look in the Netziv, on the page after that, in 13, he also comes to the same conclusion. if you look in Simon, where there's a the parenthesis Simon Kopei, al misara svara yishu makom achalik. The isra yavish ha poli tzir shematin shishim kenegdo lo yidin kam tziru poli. By a dry piece, a chatich, we don't know how much came out of it exactly in terms of time. So, b'karchaton shishim neg kol chaticha, mashenkin davarlach, lo shayach etzlo lomar, de polit sir v'nivlo b'mashin ogeyabo, el also davarlach nivlo b'mashin ogeyabo. Mishum hachi en oton shishim, el a neged mashin nivlo, v'lo neged mashin roim shenishra v'lo nivlo. Anything you see that didn't go into the pot, so the Baruch Hashemesh, that doesn't need shishim kenegdo because it's not there. Okay, he comes to this conclusion about the Lach and Yavish a little differently, but he talks about similar nafkaminas that Rav Moshe already addressed. So, Me'idat Isa, you know, the Rav Moshe camp and the Nitziv camp, even though it makes the most sense from our perspective, is rather mechudish. I was once talking to a posek about this Rav Moshe, and I was hakim and hakim, trying to understand why anyone would argue with Rav Moshe, and eventually he just said to me, it's a chiddush. I said, why is it such a chiddush? He said, because no one said it before. Well, lots of people didn't say it before. I have a couple more examples, but the Rav Moshe and Nitziv, right off the bat, are a good place to start. I would part of the reason I put some of them on course here, I don't think we'll get to talk out themselves, but because I wanted to, you know, marvel the pilpul, please look through some of the makoros over the course of the year. If you see things that are relevant to this issue, Eli Galernter just pointed out to me that he and Neil came across a pre-Toar in Simon Tzadikas who seems to say not like Rav Moshe. Ad kedei kach, that the, you know, a lot of the posts can sound like that. If you look on page 9 is a photocopy, two different simanim from a rather recent sefer called Shari Das. Got it from the library. So he talks about this and comes up with a couple other ways to try to justify what's neged the senses. And the last paragraph, he says, Agav shamadim yizeh naskib yizeh divrei hatzorchim gogol sha'olim divrei rama elu al derech ha'igash Moshe shekosav shekol shu lach balach in tzorch l'shar al k'neged ha'mashur shenivla v'cholok b'zeh lach v'hu yavish m'shirin k'neged kulo yish l'hachos b'zeh kamen m'komos. Okay, l'fum riyata achai dina der rama hu nirah k'stir m'fureshes l'zeh sher misharim k'neged kol chov shenishar b'gder b'tzorch in gogol m'sul yashiv. So we'll talk about the riot he's bringing in a second, but he says talking gadol mitzvah yashiv on Rav Moshe, even though it makes so much sense to us. So whether or not this was the Mahalakim poskim, other than Rav Moshe, there are examples, but it's definitely the Devar Mechudesh and yesh l'ayin on this. As before, we see that riot in the Ramah, a little bit of fun over here. If you look on page 19, so there's a very entertaining, very good Rabbi Schechter article from this past summer on Torah Web. Very excited to read. If you look on the second page, page 20, that first paragraph, I recently met a young Talmud Chacham who insisted that a certain halacha in Shulchan Aruch must be understood literally. We'll talk about what that halacha is. It's relevant to this as applying in all cases, even when it made no sense. I argue that it was self-understood that one uses common sense and only apply the halacha when it indeed did make sense. I later checked the Igros Moshe for Moshe Feinstein and wrote exactly the same in that particular instance. Okay, et cetera, et cetera. I told him that this was a Christian concept, the principle of the infallibility of the posek. Okay, so the reason I photocopy this is because I have a particular negiah to this because, number one, this article that Rav Schechter wrote and that my society with the young Talmud Chacham was about this shaila of the boat holds and the transferring the cargo. And that Rav Moshe is this Rav Moshe that we're talking about right now. And it came up in the summer, and Rav Schechter was looking for it, and we happened to be in the Inyan, and that's how it came to be confirmed. But again, Rav Schechter doesn't need our confirmation, Chas v'Shalom, but it's just an interesting manifestation of what we're discussing. So what's the big riot against Rav Moshe? What's one of the things that Rav Moshe has to deal with? So on page... Sorry. Page 15, okay, is a shayla that I'm going to talk about a lot more in depth in Simon Tzadi Beis, has to do with Zeya. You know, when you have a steam, you have mist coming up from a pot. Let's say you have an oven, and there's two racks in the oven. And on the bottom rack of the oven, there's an open milchik dish, and there's steam coming up from the milchik dish. And on the top, there's a pot with fleishiks inside. So the question is, how does the bottom frying pan, whatever it has the milk inside, affect the pot on the upper rack? So the Ramah says, im haya chol b'machvas on the bottom, b'inon shishim b'tavshul shebegedeiro, that's on top, neged achol shebemachvas. Okay? So now, at face value, the way you'd interpret that is that, let's say you had 5 ounces of milk in the frying pan that's on the bottom rack. So I need shishim keneged those 5 ounces in the pot that's on top. So according to Ramosha, that's almost impossible to understand with what we said so far, because how could you possibly need to be Meshire 5 ounces and shishim kenegdo in the upper pot if I look in the pot and there's still several ounces sitting there? You can't say that it jumped from one pan to the pot that's on top if it's still more or less in the bottom pot. And that, Baruch Hashem, this is a find in the Darkei Tshuva, was Nisora. He doesn't really have an answer to it, but let's read a couple lines here. Ayin Sefer Shaul ben Levi, Shes Pali al Din Zeh, Madu Alo Amrinon, Shiesh Lim Dorachol, Shenishra B'machbas, Achakach, Kamen Nifchas, Mimena, Shenos Nachol, B'machbas, Tchila, Shemidu Eitzel Eish. Why don't you see how much was there before? Make a simple deduction, subtraction, and then you know how much to be Meshai. So he spoke about this in front of Rabo Hagon Maharil, and you can see what he answered him. I don't know, I don't know. You can understand it different ways, but again, Ramosha was definitely not the first, even if there were people before him who didn't hold like this, but he's not the first. Just wanted to throw in a few more makomos to be ma'ayin, and before we leave this topic, Rabbi Simon mentioned Imri Baruch, who seems to say like Ramosha. The Bach is not so distant from that. The Baya Shulchan, in a number of places, likes to check on this Ramosha. One place to look at is Amud Kuf Tzadi Vav in the volume on Basar B'Chalav. It brings a number of rayas from the Achron, from Kresu Plesi, Chavis Das, who may not agree to this. Two things against Ramosha, just to keep in mind. Number one is a fascinating line on page 16 from the Kanfei Yonah, which is quoted by the Baal Shulchan. The Baal Shulchan over here isn't. I don't know why he didn't throw in another hack on Ramosha in this simon, but theoretically it could be. If you look on the last skinny line, he says, I'm sorry, the first wide line. Okay, so basically he suggests some sort of magical, superstitious, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, something that definitely defies our perception of science in terms of understanding how time works, that maybe something can go in even and affect something even though it's much smaller, and basically the question he's dealing with is if I have melach that's balua bedam and the melach falls into a gedera, so I have to be mishar shishim keneged the amount of melach that's there. So he has a basic question: why don't you just figure out how much dam was there, the assuming you don't hold the chanam mishar shirim, because the melach, you know, takes up some space, there's some salt that fell in, it's not all dam. So he says it has to be that somehow the dam gets in there even more than you can imagine, because the melach should take up space, but it doesn't take up so much space that you can't shtup more dam inside. So I can't imagine that Ramosha would agree to that. But it's another thing to keep in mind. Again, throughout the year, you're going to find makoros that reflect this or reflect the opposite, and it's kedai to try to analyze that. The last thing on this topic, at the end of the packet in page 39, it's especially exciting because it's a little bit of a Nashim Nezikin Shaila, where the Gemara Bava Metzia says that if you are mafkid eitzel somebody caskets with wine, so Shaila is how much I have to return to him. Do we assume that some of the wine got absorbed into the walls of the kli, and I don't have to replace that because that's part of the natural process of storing it in the kalim? So the Chavis Yar basically says that even if the walls of the wine cask get so saturated, like that Gemara says, some wine goes into the walls and stays there, there's still room for Tom to come in afterwards. And this is quoted by Pesach Chuvin Sadi Gimel, that it's possible to absorb, even after the walls of the casket are saturated with liquid, with the wine, I can still put Tom inside. Again, that's against Rav Moshe's Yisod. According to Rav Moshe, whatever's still in front of us, if no mamoshes went there, no tam went there. You can't say one without the other. Okay, so let's end that topic for now. So that's our first. Yeah.
What
do you mean?
So, by time.
Not by liquids.
But not by liquids, right.
Not by liquids, you say the trace amount of liquid that. No, we're in motion degree, and we have an ocean with such a small amount of liquid leaving that we can't measure it based on our own scales. But if you really would know particle by particle and molecule by molecule, you'd know how much left.
If your motion was if one molecule left, I only need sheesh from Kanaga the molecule.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. But I think in terms of that, Marco Lucia, that if you will be saturated with liquid, it's still going to have a little bit more.
The Gemara puts a cap on how much stoves or whatever it is, how much gets absorbed, and
that's measurable. Then you're just like measurably not going to take it anymore. It's going to be a very small amount which is still going to take in. It's not going to be enough people from the Lush and Zikin because in that case, they have to be able to reshire it. As far as this time goes.
But it's important for us also because whatever went in, we're going to be reshired when it comes out the next time I cook in that pot. So if it's something that we never knew went in, we never know it goes out either. So it's if it's so negligible, then you're right, we're never going to catch it. Okay. There's a more technical way to determine why, when you have one boat hold, it doesn't go into the next boat hold. I don't think we're going to finish this today, but we'll just start because this is very important. Rav Shaftar reports in a tshuva that he was told by metallurgists. I think that's a scientist who deals with metals, that they did some experiments with radioactive isotopes, okay, meaning that they treat liquids with radioactivity, with radioactive substances, and they're able to trace exactly where little particles on the molecular level, where they go, how far they go, etc. So this part of the experimentation came out with the conclusion that time spreads 1/2 inch into the walls of a pot. Okay? That's obviously not so much. And if we could get down to, you know, to know that precisely every single time, then instead of being Mashiach Shishim Kenegi the whole pot when I have a tower for Shiloh, I can get away with being Mashiach only Shishim Kneged the first 1/2 inch of the pot. Okay, because obviously whatever wasn't Balua that far in, it's not there. And which, by the way, now that we know the Ramosha, puts better perspective on why that is. Because if Tom can't get that far in on their own circumstances, then that's why it's still in the pot. That's why I'm still looking at this at almost the same amount of liquid that I started with. Okay, I don't want to get too far into this because it's going to snowball, but I'll just mention a couple things. I want to read a... when we're done with Habura, leave it as a... That's an interesting fact, okay? I'm afraid if I get quoted on this and we didn't give the whole story, so there's still a lot more that we have to fill in the blanks. The most relevant thing to what we're discussing right now, without going further, is... what Rav Shaftar quotes in a different tshuva, this boat hold shaila goes back for a long time, even though it's constantly being this orer because there are different changes in the shipping methods, but it goes back for a while. This was written in 1995, so it goes back to the 60s. Meharab Rav Michal Shurkin Sheikha. Okay. B'shem HaGramzal, Shehzbarer Oz Sheshochu B'Svinis Sheovru Al Yam HaPacific, Shemen Shehayacham, Besir shaya mechuber mamish im sir shaya bo shuman shal chazir cham. Okay, so they had again two connected, very tremendous pots, and they're both hot. The dofen echad og hayemeshamish kedofen gam lasir hazeh, the gam lasir hazeh, and there was a very thick wall, but that one wall served as a wall for both of them. Elashaya og meod, it was 3 feet long, 3 feet wide. The low bekelim ke'elu dibra Torah, kemenduma lishakein shemati bechavid tzvi shachter. So what Rav Shaftar is telling us over here is, you know, obviously the 6 inches is a much bigger kiddush, but I'm mentioning this now as the Pesach because if we're trying to solve the problem, so if we can find a situation, and it's very likely because of the size of the ship and the size of the tankers. So if you have a 3-foot separation between the two pots, there is some sort of limit to how far you're going to say that time travels. There has to be some limit. And whatever the situation, by 3 feet, so Rav Moshe for sure was masking that was sufficient in terms of separating the different kalim. just to bring one, before we finish, just before we talk, okay, this is important just for one other halachic shayla, and this is very relevant in your kitchen. The tshuva is very careful to mention the fact that the walls get hot as a result of the stuff that's inside the tankers. So that's relevant to the din of cham mitzasu cham kulo. There's a halacha, it's not muskan by all the rishonim. We don't hold it in every situation, but if you have a kli and part of it became hot, so it's possible, let's say I have a spoon and I stick the spoon in and I'm mixing up the chicken soup, so maybe the tam travels up the kli into the walls of into the handle of the spoon. What's the nafkamina? The next time, if I want to mix up my coffee and I use the back of the spoon, so do you say that there's blius of fleishik from the chicken soup in the back of the spoon that's now going into my milk of coffee? So cham mitzasu cham kulo is relevant to that discussion, but it should be noted that there is no discussion in most cases, certainly in the case like that of the chicken soup, when the top of the spoon did not get hot as well. Cham mitzasu cham kulo is a din in when the tam transfers, but the potential for tam transferring has to come with yatzel lettuce heat. That's pasha. So where does it come up most frequently? The kasher svarim nowadays like to talk about what's very prevalent in Israel and America also, the double sinks. Double sinks made out of stainless steel, you have a milk sink and a fleishik sink and a panel in between. So if you ever wash the dishes, it's very possible for, you know, as time goes on, the stream of water coming from the faucet can heat up the metal. So maybe we should say, if I have milk pots in here and fleishik pots over there and I'm washing both, even though I'm not washing both at the same time, but if they're sitting there, et cetera, et cetera, something comes in contact with that, maybe there's time that's spreading from one side to the other. So I was once standing by Schefter, and someone asked him a similar question like this, and he started laughing. Because I never did experimentation with this, but it's so unlikely that the heat on one side of the sink is going to pass and make so much heat that the second side also becomes yatzel lettuce, and something's going to come in contact with it. It doesn't happen. Maybe it's more likely with metal than porcelain sinks, but it's almost impossible. So that is another factor in this havaras tam tzad to be matter the ships, if we can determine somehow, and it can be determined if, especially when you have a very wide wall in between the tanks, if there is a point where it's no longer yatzel lettuce when it's transferring from one to the other. And then you know that the blis didn't get through because that's how time works. You always need yatzel lettuce heat. Okay, so Bli Neder, try to pick this up and finish this issue. Some more nafkamina in the kitchen another time. Is this time decent for people, or I'm open to suggestion, whatever works. Next week, Tuesday? Is that Shai? I'm not putting him on the spot. That's Bli Neder, that's the plan. Thank you.